Okay, ready?
Ready?
I'm so quiet. I don't know what's going on here.
We're missing
Jeff. Oh, I was there, but Dan would be listening if you could listen live, but he's in a meeting.
Okay. It's getting dark. It's getting dark early.
It's hard, right? It's hard. It's hard to get out at night. Also, like, if you do Mincha Maariv, you know, 5:30, you could, like, call it a night. 6 o'clock.
It's not,
like,
not designed to make this early, right?
You're like...
Oh, wait, so wait, that's an option?
What? Well, oh, to call it a night? To call it a night? I don't know, but I don't know. Maybe I don't. We could put it out there and say if you know if 7 o'clock works better. If it's like now that it gets
it's better
dark,
later.
Better later.
Get with the kids
and like yeah,
dinner.
Yeah, I know. It might be easier like this. Okay, you just have to keep your energy up, or at least be a little bit awake
by
the time
you
get there.
Get your horse.
Okay, so we're in the next part of the story. Really, this is an important part to keep in mind because we're introduced here to the
hero
of the story, the main character. As much as we've been focused on finding the princess, or at least identifying the character traits of the princess of our lives, that excitement and passion and youthful exuberance towards mitzvahs and really all of Avodas Hashem, our davening. We've really been focused in the first three chapters on identifying what that is and what it means to be missing that, and how that goes missing. Here we're introduced to the character, the main character, who we're going to follow his escapades throughout the rest of the story. So if you look at the book, you know, this is about the princess, this part, and the rest of the story is about the viceroy. So who's this viceroy? What does Rabbi Nachman say? What's the next part of the story? Let's just get our brains back into it, mine especially. So her father was very pained. Remember, he goes to the room, she's not there. She's obviously been taken, and now he is in great pain. V'halach levaksha ana v'ana. And the king himself goes to look for her, right? On the bed, in the closet, he goes outside to the garden. He might have traveled places to try to find her, but she's not there. Amar Hasheni L'Malchus. So the viceroy gets up.
The second to the king.
Machmas Sharosh HaMelech Mitzta'ar Me'od. Because he saw, Rabbi Nachman points out, that the viceroy, what was his impetus? Why is he, what is his call to action? As he sees, the king is in a lot of pain. Ubike Shiyitnulo, and he requests for three things. A misharis, he asks for a helper, a sus, a horse, umos alhotzos, and money to spend on the, you know, expenditures that he goes, as he's going to search, v'halach levaksha, and he goes to search for her. And Rabbi Nachman gives us a very interesting line. V'haya mevaksha ma'od, and he searched for her a lot. Zman meruba ma'od, a very long time. Ad shematza, until he finds her. Right? He tells us the end. He tells us the end. I don't know what the point the rest of the book is, right? You just told me he finds her. Right? So that's part of the exploration, is understanding what Rabbi Nachman is doing by foreshadowing the success, the eventual success, and giving away the end, right? Any good storyteller knows that the best part of the story is the twist at the end, right? Like they say about like every movie. Really, you could just watch the first 3 minutes. You get to know the characters, right? You get introduced to the characters. Then you have drama in the middle, right? Like when they were teaching you in school how to do like plots, right? Then you have drama. And then you have resolution, but the resolution is usually like right before those final credits. It's the last 6 minutes, right? That's where the big battle is, Megatron. It's always at the end. The whole thing is like driving this way, going this way, transforming this thing. Then all of a sudden at the end, you have the big battle, right? You could just, so Rabbi Nachman gives us the end of the story. And then he tells us, Ata Masapir Eich Biksha Ad Shematza. And now we're going to talk about, and we'll tell over in the story, how he searched for her until he finds her. So let's break this apart, as we do in the book, to try to understand, because I think Isaac started with a question. I think really that's the second question we have to ask. The first question we have to ask is, if it's possible, flip from story to life, and if this excitement in Judaism is possible to have, then how come in the king in the story, or Hashem in our lives, is not the one to find her? It's very specifically not the king that finds her. Even though Rabbi Nachman in the story tells us that he went to look for her here and there, all over, and he couldn't find her. Why is it that Hashem doesn't have the power in this situation to find the princess? Why doesn't the king find the princess?
Well, to me at least, whether in the story or in real life, I think the king, Hashem, knows exactly where she is. That's not the whole point. The point is about her and her journey back to getting to finding the king and finding Hashem. God knows where everyone is, where everyone's holding, where everything that's going to happen. So he knows what's going to happen. He knows where everyone is. It's that the whole story is about the journey, about us working our way back to finding him.
Oh, so that's a beautiful, beautiful way to look at it. Who is it?
Yes.
We're going to talk. We're going to get, that's the next question.
Robert De Niro.
That's the next question.
Well, isn't that?
What does it represent, right? But before you're even introduced to the viceroy in the story, Rabbi Nachman tells you that the king himself was unable to accomplish this mission. Which is different. Yeah. How do you take it?
The way I take it is, the way we had a relationship, we were on this level, right? Let's just say, when we were close to Hashem, right? When the princess left, which Hashem looked in the palace on that level, you weren't there. You weren't in that on that level anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The king could have very well would have taken all the king's horses and all the king's men,
right,
and gone searching and found her. But he was looking in his
king
castle,
saying, "Are you close by? Are you in my sphere?"
And because we couldn't find them in the sphere, we're already because we. Left, where
because of wherever
down,
she is, right?
We're no longer on that level or on that field where Hashem.
Very valid point.
If you're not ready to answer who the viceroy is, then the viceroy is just a conduit of Hashem, and he's just an extension of him.
Okay.
Right, and it's just another facet of his being.
Okay, but
and
what?
Therefore, it's not that he's not able to; it's that the kayach of viceroy needed to be the one that did it.
But why? Why does that do the viceroy not himself?
You're right. You're 100% right. The question really is, why does Rabbi Nachman make a point in the story of saying that the king went to search, and it sounds like far and wide, like the king went this way and that way. The king was unable to accomplish the mission. And he makes a point of it, as opposed to being like, she was gone, and the next thing is, and the viceroy stood up and went and found her. Meaning, your point is true in eventually, but Rabbi Nachman's making a point of the king attempting and not having the ability, not being able to go find it. And I think that's such a good point that where's the king looking, right? Meaning, could Hashem have a taina on you? Could Hashem require of you to feel close to him if he's not even, like, Hashem is the holiest and you're just a regular Joe, right? Meaning you're on a different plane. So then you turn to Hashem after 120 and you're like, what do you mean? We moved in different circles, right? We were just hanging out with different crowds. It's kind of like there's something that could connect the two. There's that part of the circle that's, overlapping, right, in the Venn diagram.
That Hashem was putting in the effort to go and look right away. The king was going to go look right away. But once he realized, I think sort of along the lines of what Isaac was saying, once he realized how far gone she was, and that it's not, like just a simple, fix of, hey, let's talk this out, and then he's like, okay, now it's on her to go figure her way back. If she was close enough where it was a simple fix, then yeah, I would be able to go and reach out and, help out. But the fact that she went that far off, then it's, okay, she needs to be the one to put in the effort to get that connection back, to go and find.
So let's build on that. I like that idea. That's deep. That's really deep. the psychologically, the princess has heard the king say, get out of here, and has interpreted it, we said mistakenly, as the king does not want to be close to her, right? So now, oh, it would have been worth it to wait. You would have told me. <It's> Nicole, <goes, "Hi." laughs>
Where'd you find the year?
Where did you find it?
Last question.
Very nice. Okay, L'chaim. Woo. So the king's not able to find her, right? What are we trying to point out from the king not being able to find her? The princess believes that the king already told her get out, and that he wanted separation, right? And she fell into this mistake. Now, you can imagine someone who's been separated. Now let's get rid of the element of time, because we're now kind of morphing into this part of the story that's not dependent on time. But imagine a situation where the princess was out of the palace for so long, she's herself forgotten her own identity. Imagine someone who has so lost the excitement of youth, I'll say it this way, imagine someone who's so lost the excitement of youth that there is nothing that can excite them. Meaning there is nothing, you talk about it in Judaism, there's nothing in Judaism that is exciting anymore. They're so far removed from the palace, the closest with Hashem. And then when you talk about life also, you say like people that see a beautiful, it's nothing, nothing, nothing that happens could get that out of you, right? And that's the way that the author points out that was Rabbi Nachman's intention in saying that Hashem searched for the princess, the king searched for the princess, but couldn't find her, is those messages were still going out. The king still had people, or the king himself, walking through town and saying, where's the princess? Has anyone seen the princess? But there's no message that comes from Hashem that is enough to wake a person up. Once you've lost it, and so you're so far lost and so removed from that sphere of being close with Hashem, then there's nothing that excites you. When you have the excitement, right? Then every moment, you could have moments, you build moment upon moment of things that you're passionate about and excited about. But when you've lost it, there's almost nothing that could do it for you. Like Beezy said, when you're in a rut, right? When you're in a rut and or depression sets in, when these elements set in, you could see the most beautiful mountaintop and you're like, okay, pretty cool. Just think about the difference between a kid and a grown-up in an amusement park, right? And you think about the excitement, or like Legoland, right? Which is even like really little kids, right? everyone except for Isaac, right? But you walk in there as an adult, and it could be the most exciting thing for a kid, for someone who has that excitement. But there is nothing in this park that's gonna, I'm gonna be like, wow, that's amazing. There's a
specific reason for that. A child has imagination and an adult doesn't.
Ah, so it's that koach hadimyon and that ability to use and tap in and live in an imaginative world. Just being able to dream of something bigger and better and greater, right? That ability. It's that lack of cynicism, right? Where they see a magical kingdom and you see a bunch of stucco facade, right? Right, exactly. And you see the $1,000 hit it took to get four people past the entry gate, right?
But something else?
It's that, yeah.
I think maybe it's that the princess doesn't want to be found by the king. She's so upset at him that she doesn't want to be found by him.
So she so misinterpreted it, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And so it's almost like she hears, the princess in our story hears from in the back of some barn where she's hiding under the hay, right? Very unprincess-like or whatever with the horses, in the back of the stables. She hears from the street someone calling, princess, princess, where are you? And she just digs herself in deeper, mm-hmm. Right? That rut muscle that Beezy just said, right? Like once you're in the rut, it's like it's very hard to climb out over the top. And so Rabbi Nachman points out that the messages, external messages, even when you think about Yiddishkeit, you have moments where that could be so inspiring, but it's like your heart is a stone. That same heart that we say all Hashem wants is your heart, right? Rachmana Libabai, that same heart is like a stone, and you're sitting there and the shofar is blasting on Rosh Hashanah and you can't muster up any emotional feeling. Like, you can't find that part of you, right? And so you're saying, you know, sometimes, yeah, sometimes you're kind of pushing yourself away from it because you know what it means when you get drawn in, right? It's a big ask. But also, like, there's...
You don't want to get hurt again.
There's just... Yeah, maybe. Yeah. You're not dealing... No, it's true. You're not dealing with that message that Hashem sent you. You're not dealing with it the right way, in a positive way. And so you're kind of pulling back. You could be kind of pulling back.
And anyways, until you're ready to hear it...
That's
only when you'll be able to go and...
That's exactly where... Exactly. And then Rabbi Nachman introduces us to... Who is able to find you? Meaning, who is able to find that in you is the viceroy. Who is the viceroy? Who does the viceroy represent? So there's many names for the viceroy.
There are two ways to get out of the rut.
Yeah.
Either you could build a ladder, i.e. the viceroy, little piece by little piece, and work on it. Or you can get jolted.
Yeah.
Zapped.
Yeah.
And you're going to fly right out of the rut.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
is Yom Kippur that jolt?
I don't know.
Right. What is it? It's like the holiest day of the year. Does it do it?
Is that sustainable? Meaning, if you get jolted from all the way down here to boom, just like that,
it can't get the heart pumping. That's all.
get that feeling for like a couple seconds, right?
Because if you go 0 to 100 too quickly, you're just gonna
burn out.
Yeah.
It could be. It's not sustainable.
Right. So that's why going step by step.
You build the ladder yourself. The viceroy building the ladder from the bottom up. From within, meaning what he's introducing us to is that it's not an external force that we're looking for in life, Judaism, family, kids, business. It's not an external force that we're looking for. I need something to motivate me, right? But rather, what Rabbi Nachman is telling us very clearly is that the viceroy comes from inside of you. The viceroy is representative of what? We call it a million things. Call it the Pintaliyad. Call it the Nekuda Tova. Right? Call it that point inside of your neshama that is unable ever, ever to go off the deep. Right? It's unable... To go off the derech, right? It's unable to be sullied.
It's the religious drift that you can never get rid of.
It's the diamond in the rough, literally.
It's the pach shemen.
We have Hanukkah coming up. 30 days before, we got to start learning, right? It's the jug of oil that they found, meaning everything went to pot, right? The Greeks took over. We come back in, we're rededicating. And what do we find? One little, tiny little, it's no coincidence that what that oil does is light a fire and a flame, right?
But at the same time, from what Rav Nachman's saying, that little flame still needs help along the way, meaning he requested three specific things.
The flame always...
But just help. Understand, before you get to what he asks for and what he needs in order to be successful, right? Before you get there, just understand, where does that flame live? Where does that flame live in our lives? Not in an external, you know, lightning bolt that zaps you back to what you're supposed to do. Not in an external experience, someone who is going to drag you across the finish line, but rather, that flame exists only within each and every person on their own, and it exists inside there, and it's burning bright. It's burning bright. This is like, you know, we like he said in the voice note, right? This is so fundamental. Is that the power to correct is not from an external source. The power to correct is from within the person themselves.
It's still external because he saw the king's pain. So it's still an external stimulus.
Ah, but that's the driving force. It's not an external. Now, where's the power come from? That's the motivating force.
There's an initiation from within, but it requires an external recognition.
It requires a recognition that when the king said, "May the goat, no good one take you," that his desire was not that there should actually be separation. His desire was only to create the feeling of separation or the potential of separation so that we can experience closeness, right? But that's really just the motivating factor. So you're right. There needs to be a recognition that something's not right, right? Something's not right. Now what are you going to do about it? Don't look for outside things to come drag you out of this rut, right? You have within you the power to climb out over the side of that rut that you've dug.
Still need three things.
Right, you still...
One sec.
One more question.
You have to understand the context of the three things, but you're right, 100%.
Yeah. Well, question. Let's say when the king said, "May the no good one take you," the princess would have said, "I'm sorry," and begged to be there.
He would have said exactly what I wanted. That was Mordechai's point last week. That would have been accomplished the whole mission.
Maybe he would have said...
He would have still sent her to her room, but at least...
He never sent her to her room.
She went. She left.
No, but she might have sent her to the room.
Who? Say,
why are we talking about hypotheticals?
It's not a hypothetical. No. I'll tell you
that
why.
Was last week. That was I'll what we uncovered. Mordechai said it so clearly. Mordechai said it so clearly.
That
yeah.
That Mordechai, that's what the king said. Oh, this is what I want.
That's exactly what I want. Maybe not. Right back into.
Maybe part of it is no. May the no good one take you and then come back.
So
it's very hard to say that. That's the problem with the Mordechai.
We're not talking about. For all we know, this could have happened 14 times where that didn't happen, and this is just discussing the part when it didn't.
No, we're not. We're never discussing it. So the point, but. No.
But that was really the crux of the discussion last week was, and what we got to was, is that the king wants holy chutzpah. When you feel separated, the king doesn't want you to say, "Oh, he must not. It's because of look at me. Yeah, it makes sense." No, he wants you to say, "I'm still in," and that's exactly he wants you to call the bluff. That's exactly the reaction that he wants. We saw Rav Tzadok by the Ma'apilim. The ones who went into Eretz Yisrael afterwards, he says, right? He says, holy chutzpah. That's what Hashem wants. So you're pointing out something very interesting. But let's talk about this pintaliyid for a minute before we get to the things that the words that are used are the inner tzaddik, which is very interesting words. When we say tzaddik, usually what you're referring to. Even if it's a shem ha-mushal, right, borrowed term, right, like in the beginning of Tanya, usually when you say tzaddik, you're talking about someone who's worked out their issues and they're on the righteous path, right? But to understand fundamentally the way Rabbi Nachman uses this word, tzaddik, is that there's an inner tzaddik, that there's a part of us that's a tzaddik. There's a little candle in there.
And always remains a tzaddik.
And cannot step off the path inside of each and every one of us. I don't know, I thought this is groundbreaking. Yeah. But and where is it? Where is that house? Where is that energy of Yisrael housed? It's here in this Pintel Yid. Right?
It's in the soul of someone always good and always
in that. Yeah.
I mean the soul, the essence.
Yeah, the essence of the person, right? Everything. Right?
The shell on the outside and all the schmutz that we're surrounded by, that's what causes all the problems. But the inner soul is
that's what makes us hit it.
Exactly.
Everyone's a tzaddik. Deep down,
every yid's a big tzaddik. That's why it's not a crazy. It sounds crazy when you sing the song. Say everyone's a big tzaddik, right? But what's the vart? Is that that's who you are? That's who you are, right? Is that tzaddik? And that is represented in the story by the viceroy. I just want to read you something. I think it's worth it. I hope it's worth it. I asked for some feedback. We did some separate reading last time also. I just want to read you one piece here from Likutei Halachos. This is the first piece in Likutei Halachos. Likutei Halachos, written by Rabbi Nassen, Rabbi Nachman's main Talmud. You'll see his name in the book many times, from Nemura. Ari was just by his kever. And Rabbi Nassen, Rabbi Nachman said about Rabbi Nassen, if it wouldn't be for my Nassen, right? Then none of my Torah would have ever survived. Because Rabbi Nassen went and wrote down all of Rabbi Nachman's Torah. And so whatever we have from Rabbi Nachman is really written by Rabbi Nassin. Now, Rabbi Nassin authored this his own book called Likutei Halachos. He authored many Sfarim. He authored his own book called Likutei Halachot, Likutei Halachos. And the idea of this book is to connect Rabbi Nachman's teachings with the Shulchan Aruch, to understand that at the core of the Shulchan Aruch is really many of the lessons that Rabbi Nachman was teaching his whole life, which seem to be lessons that float out in the world and maybe are not connected necessarily to practical, everyday Jewish life and Torah law, but Rabbi Nassin draws and builds those bridges in a very strong way. So I'm not going to bring out the connection to the beginning of Shulchan Aruch from this idea, but I think this paragraph is just beautiful to understand what this Nekuda Tova, what this point is inside of us, and to understand what it could do, right? Let's see this paragraph. He says, "V'zeh b'chinas masha amar rabbeinu." This is the idea of what the rabbis have taught in the Medrash. The pasuk in Shir Hashirim says, "Listen to this pasuk. It says, Shechorani, I am blackened, v'navani, but I am beautiful." That's a pasuk in Shir Hashirim. I'm blackened, I'm black, but I'm beautiful, right? And the Medrash says, Shechorani, I am blackened, meaning I've become dirty, b'masa ha'egel, through the golden calf, but I am beautiful through the masa mishkan, through the creation and the building of the mishkan, of the tabernacle. And says Rabbi Nassin, what is this trying to tell us? Hainu, afal pi sheyesh li chatoim harbe. What Shlomo HaMelech is saying is that even though I have many sins, and listen to this word carefully, v'nisrachakti me'od mimenu yisbarach, and I have traveled very far away from Hashem, right? Alluding this idea of being far away, right? Using this metaphor of being far away like the princess. V'zeh b'chinas ma'aseh ha'egel. And he says that's exactly the focus of the golden calf, or the action of building a golden calf. She'kolel kol ha'chatoim sheba'olam. Because that really includes all the sins, because we know anyone who does Avodah Zarah, it's like they're being kofar b'kol ha'Torah kula, right? So it's like you've done all the sins in the world. You're blackened by a sin that is includes all the sins in the world. Says Shlomo HaMelech, afal pikein, nevertheless, v'navani, I'm still beautiful. V'masa mishkan, with the creation of the mishkan, hainu b'chinas, that's exactly what we're saying, is the ma'at tov shani motza ba'atzmi adayin. The little bit of good that I can find within myself that remains, right? And he says, really, this is a morning meditation that people can do and that people should do the moment they wake up. Is the one of the first things you should think about is find what is my Nekuda Tova? What is the part of me that has never done anything wrong? And you have to go digging sometimes, right? Depends on the day before or the person's lifestyle, Rabbi Nagel. But sometimes you got to go digging. And sometimes you got to go digging through the trash pile, right? But like an engagement ring at the bottom of the trash pile, still a beautiful diamond, right? You got to go find it. Ki tekef achar masa egel. He says there's a deep connection with the golden calf. Immediately following the golden calf, and the whole story over there, they got the commandment to build the Mishkan. You see, they're intricately connected. Is that the fact that you have the Masa Egel, the fact that you have the golden calf, doesn't negate the fact that you still have now a Mishkan. Al Yedeshin Isratza Hashem Yisparach L'Yisrael, that what was it that was able to save the Jewish people? Al Yedei Moshe Rabbeinu, through Moshe Rabbeinu, Shemasar Nafsha Aleim Vispalo Ba'adam, that he davened for them. Again, I believe that when he's referring here, he says, look at the model that's being created in the Torah. Big Avera, right? And what saves you from the Avera, so to speak, or what saves you from the Gzera that Hashem has decided on? What saves you from it is the Moshe, is the Tzaddik. And what is his whole point? Is that where does the Tzaddik reside? Part of the tzaddik, or part of that element of tzaddik, resides inside of each and every one of us. So he's bringing out Moshe Rabbeinu here because not for the idea that you need a Moshe in your personal life to pray for you and get you off the hook. That's not the point. The point is that you need your Moshe, your tzaddik inside of you, your viceroy to go find your princess. That's what you need.
It's really mamish. Helps that we've seen it in the past, at least. The exact same scenario.
You've seen the scenario. You've seen the model, right? You see the model works, right? And he says, what was Moshe's greatness? Ki Moshe haya yachol zos. Limtzo nekuda tova afil v'apachos shebchusim. What made Moshe a great leader? There's a big leadership lesson that is woven throughout the works of Rabbi Nachman, at least I've seen it a couple times. A big leadership lesson is that what is the leader's job? Is the leader's job is to inspire the greatness within each person and to show them that they themselves have greatness already inside of them. And if you think about your most, if you have, right, some people went through school without any positive experiences with teachers, but if you think about any teachers that you connected to, right, it was the one who believed in you. It was the one who put his arm around you and said, you know, I've heard great stuff from last year. It's not the teacher that said, you know, I'm going to whip you into shape, right? Or I'm going to teach you something, right? It's the teacher that's able to inspire greatness from within you. And you think about raising kids also, it's like, I definitely don't know a lot about raising kids. But you see kids' faces light up when you tell them that they have uncovered something within themselves. You see what makes them tick. And you see that you can get deep inside of them by helping them understand what their power is. You know, what's good about them. So when you're pointing out something, it's not that you've done something necessarily good. That's not necessarily where the value is in pointing it out. But rather in pointing out that good thing that you did is branching off from something good inside of you. And you're helping them uncover that, right? When they can look down at themselves and see clearly their nekuda tova, their little point of goodness, then that's probably the most important thing.
I think you add another layer to that. The reason why the teacher is supportive to the kid is because they're threatened by the kid. Mm-hmm. And the teacher who isn't supportive is the one who feels threatened.
What is
he feels he's going to lose his control over the kid if he doesn't whip him into shape.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing with Tintel Yid. That it never feels threatened by whatever we do in our Kitsangis, because that will never affect it.
It's fine.
So since it's never threatened, it can always be supportive. It doesn't have to be.
Very good. Very good.
So it's interesting that Moshe is the representative of that, because I'm not talking about like someone like Yitzhak, who came from like, oh, my father was a problem. You're talking about someone who in himself was, you know, separated from family, grew up in the house of Paro, and
right.
You know, so I think it's very interesting that even someone could achieve that greatness within them, that Nekuda Tova, even not having like background from
Moshe himself, right? Right, Moshe himself.
So famous.
I hear that. I hear. So now we get to the paragraph we talk about the provisions for the journey, right? So we're saying that the power is inside of us, and that's number one thing to remember as we go through this, is that the viceroy in the story, remember we struggled with this? Well, we reached a point where we chopped this and it opened up everything, I think. The viceroy in the story is a separate character from the princess, right? Whereas if we were making the movie that David Wogi wants to make, right? Then you'd have to cast someone to play the viceroy. You'd have to cast someone to play the princess, right? Understanding that as you translate that into life, these two characters actually exist within yourself, right? The princess is the excitement that you have. And the viceroy is the Pintel Yid inside of you that's constantly struggling to shine bright out into the world, right? So just understand as we flip back and forth, now we really have a blending of two characters into one when we talk about regular life. It is healthy though, or it's totally understandable to look at the Pintel Yid as if it's like another part of me, right? You said, what did you say? The Yetzer Tov, right? Yetzer Tov sounds like an external force though, right? Meaning, I don't know, at least when I say it, is like the Yetzer Tov is like that white angel on this shoulder, right?
It's imaginary
external force, right? But I think this is we have to remember the Pintel Yid is deep inside of us. It's that voice that talks to us, that tells us, you know what the right thing is to do. right? Is that your Yetzer Tov? Yeah, you can call it a Yetzer Tov, but that's you. That's you. That's a part of you. That's your neshama speaking to you, right?
Where does the Yetzer Hara fit in?
And where does the Yetzer Hara fit in? So the Yetzer Hara is interesting, right? Because it starts out as a snake, right? Starts out in the story as a snake, right? Then you internalize it, which means that all you've done is taken that external force of evil, and you've now incorporated that and said that that's an equal voice inside of me. Not you.
Can't split Adam. Identities.
Adam, right? Adam did this one for us, right? But now we're stuck with this, right? So now we have this voice inside of us that's trying to pull us, or we're programmed almost to be pulling away from who we really are, right? Like Ben, you pointed out, like that's your, what we're talking about is your neshama, right? Your nekuda tova. It's a small, maybe it's, you know, your neshama gets a lot of dirt built up on it. Kind of hard to find or sense your neshama. But this pintle yid, if you allow it to go out and search for the viceroy, then the pintle yid, like Rabbi Nachman says, the pintle yid finds the princess. Right? That's going to be the power that finds the princess. Did you ever wonder, I don't know, when you see people like numbing their pain with, kol mine dvar, right? All types of things, right? You see people, and even if they're not doing, lines of coke, but you see people, I think about myself, right? Sometimes when I don't want to think about stuff or be engaged in an active process of thinking about life, so then you'll put on a podcast or a movie or whatever, and sometimes it's like just an opportunity to just like check out, right? Distraction, right? I always felt like the driving force to do that is because we have such a force inside of us that's trying to get us to do good, meaning that Nekuda Tova is constantly reminding us that there's good stuff to do. And sometimes we need to like, you just feel like you have to veg out. I need to stop that voice, because when you're not feeding the good, right? So then it just creates like angst, right? Or like hunger. A hunger, an angst, a desire for good. And that's natural. That's naturally inside of us. And so the distractions, you kind of have to like, sometimes, I don't know, I feel like Jews especially are challenged with this. Like we have to turn up the volume on the distraction very high, more than the regular person. I don't know. I just had a thought. I don't know. I thought at some point maybe that's why there's a crossover with the Jews. You know, Jews control Hollywood and Jews control business. And, you know, like they say, right? But like the whole entertainment industry and that whole thing.
And they could do very bad. Like for instance, Madoff. For instance,
right?
You know, so it could be flipped the other way too.
Right. Right. Well, right.
He still only took himself down. Something to it.
But you have like, I don't know, I just feel like sometimes like it's as a result of having a Nekuda Tova, there's a constant angst, even for people that are checked out. Like even for people that are checked out, I just felt like that's why they need to do so much, possibly I myself need to do so much like numbing or distracting, is because there's that constant feeling of the Nekuda Tova, like I just want to come out. I want to be out there. And even if you're not sensing it or not in tune with it, it creates that hunger or that angst. And that's like, I don't know, I just feel like there's just like the volume has to be really, really high to make sure you don't hear it. Because every time he raises his voice up, he's like, go do good, go get close to Hashem. And you're like, yo, chill out. I don't know, it was a feeling that I had.
Where does the Yetzer come into the story?
So that's what Isaac was saying, is could you just call it the Yetzer Tov, the Pintle Yid? Is there a crossover there?
Is there?
I don't know.
What do you think?
I don't think there is, but I'm coming up with the opinion that they don't exist in the story.
Well, where does the Yetzer Tov come from? It's not outside source. It comes from inside.
But isn't that true? Like the Yetzer Tov is implanted in you, or that's you? That's your neshama.
I mean, I think the Yetzer Tov as opposed to the Yetzer Hara is separate. I don't think the Yetzer Hara is inside of you. And therefore, the Yetzer Tov that is in juxtaposition to that.
They're both inside of you.
Aren't they both inside of you? Like, wasn't that the whole thing about the eating facets from the Eitz Hadas? Eitz Hadas Tovira, meaning you're programmed to be completely in tune with Hashem. Adam Harishon and Chava, programmed to be completely in tune with Hashem, means that naturally their neshama would shine bright, right? I mean, in some way, right? I mean, the fact that they weren't embarrassed of the fact that they had to reproduce with their body, right?
Okay.
The fact that they were naked and it wasn't, right, didn't cause embarrassment. Isn't that what Chazal bring out from that? Is like, because they were just in tune with Hashem, so like reproduction, there was no like bad side of that. There was no like using those tools for the wrong thing.
Okay.
So that was, so natural human being is just a neshama with clothing called a body, and we're okay with that. We're like, you're a fine-tuned machine. Everything's in order, right? And then don't Chazal say that like through the snake, through eating from the Eitz Hadas, what we were basically doing was taking the power of the snake and putting it inside of us.
We tainted our pureness.
We covered it over.
And we put it within us.
And we gave our body a seat at the table. And now our body is cause for embarrassment because it's no longer a finely tuned machine. Now we have body parts that could go the wrong way. It's a muscle for much bigger, like,
if
much
we went all
for
the
everything.
Way.
And my second option is the Yetzer Harah is what she did to make him angry.
Uh huh.
And the Yetzer Tov is when she tells the viceroy.
But she allowed the Yetzer Harah
to
make her
be there for this amount of time. You have to do this.
She wants
this
to be found.
Means. Right.
And she wants to be found. That's the Yetzer Tov.
Right. But she allowed it. It's always the guff. You can't say that because then you could always blame everything on the Yetzer Hara. Really, it's yourself not allowing the Yetzer Hara to win.
No, I think that the Yetzer Hara is something. And blaming it is only good enough to say that that's what caused it. But now you have to be strong enough to overcome it and to break it.
No, because it's always there with you.
The Yetzer Hara.
It's if you allowed it to win, it's your fault.
Isn't the Yetzer Hara?
Exactly.
Right.
But back on the Busha thing, I think the only reason why we have Busha is because we have the Yetzer Tov also. If we only had the Yetzer Hara, we would have no Busha.
Really?
Yetzer Tov, we have no Busha. It's fact that we have both.
If you only
have Hitler. Hitler had no Busha.
What?
Hitler had no Busha.
How do you know Hitler
had no Busha? You have no Busha.
You're saying you could go all the way the opposite. You could say you're saying you could go all the way the opposite.
What are you saying?
But because we ate from the.
You took my. No, but. I don't know how Busha plays a role in this at all.
I just mentioned that.
It's a side story.
No, but that's where the Yetzer Tov is.
Both of them are not about Busha. Both of them are about you controlling what's within you. When he just said he's not going to drink anymore. That's a choice he's making for whatever
reason.
They're
clearly separate parts. They're not. You can't.
No, but same idea. When you choose to open a safer instead of watch a movie, and it's a struggle for you, you're controlling your Yetzer Tov inclination to overpower.
Okay,
so are you just letting your neshama out?
But you're in control of allowing the neshama to get out.
Right.
Sometimes your neshama wants to get out and you're like, eh, the heck with it. I'd rather watch a Netflix, you'd say, or I'd rather be somewhere else and not allow it.
Right. So there's like a you,
right,
and then there's like a call it a Yetzer Tov and a Yetzer Hara, or call it your guf and your neshama,
call
your body
you
side.
Want,
that's
right.
How the Baal Tanya would say, right?
Like Rabbi Nagel said, that after Achim Reva asked him, they're going to fight. Whose fault is it?
Point fingers at each other.
Yeah. No, but for real. That,
right.
But that's what it is every single day.
Right.
The Yetzer Tov and Yetzer Hara is pointing fingers at each other.
Right.
It's like, I don't like it. I don't relate to it, but when you hear the Gedolim say, you think I don't have the Yetzer Hara? There's truth that he has the Yetzer Hara. I just don't think it's the same as mine. He says, no, it's harder, and he keeps overcoming it. Okay, pat yourself on the back, make yourself feel good. Maybe he's right, maybe he's wrong.
He sees it more.
But the point is that it's within. The point is it's always within.
Yeah, but there are three components. There's you, the Yetzer Tov, and the Yetzer Hara.
So that's what you're saying.
But you're to blame.
As long as there's no Yetzer Hara, you need the Yetzer Tov.
You're to get the credit too.
Yeah.
A guy who becomes the most amazing person, do we ever say, he had a Yetzer Tov? No, the guy reached the heights.
Yeah,
we say, okay, he worked on his Yetzer Hara, but now he may not have it.
Agreed. My point was, once you identify what the Yetzer Hara is, then you've identified the Yetzer Tov. Because the only reason we need the Yetzer Tov is because we have Yetzer Hara. We didn't have Yetzer Hara.
I don't know where you come up with that.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not sure. I'm
right. Yeah, that's crazy to say a little bit.
But before.
That's not neshama guf.
I know. That's what I said. I don't know.
Guf could exist without
right.
The Yetzer Hara, and neshama could exist.
But why do you say that?
Because we know that in the world.
No, to without the Yitzhara, then you don't need the Yitzhak.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's a little bit crazy to say.
Why? That was. What do you mean? That
then you could just be a vegetable.
Why? Then you'd just be Lizane Galashem. Yeah. Then you'd just be. No, yeah, I would say not a vegetable. I'd say you'd just be Adam Arishon Kodem Achay, right? Exactly. But that's a guf.
Oh, no, I agree. A guf is not the Yitzhara.
No, but even Adam Arishon Kodem Achay, he didn't have a Yitzhara. Right.
But once you eat from the tree, now your guf becomes the place of the existence of your Yitzhara.
Right. But also the place of your existence of Yitzhara.
Right.
I don't think a dafka comes from the neshama.
No, that I don't agree with. Why?
Because I think
that's what I was saying. Yeah.
Why? That's the whole.
That's what I'm saying. Based on.
On what?
I'm not sure.
Okay, we have to think about that. Yeah. We have to think about that. Adam Arishon before Rabbi Nagel is like very. He's jet lagged. I don't know what's going on. This is usually his opportunity to like set us straight. Like stop that's playing games. Go eat.
No, this is your thought to me also.
Yeah. But before the chait, before the chait, we're doing only good.
Good. We weren't doing anything before the
Chait. For what? For,
we didn't do anything. No
what
challenge.
Do you mean? That was.
There's no challenge.
It was living in Gan Eden. It was living with the Ziv Ashchina, right?
It wasn't even challenge.
Of course it was challenge. Otherwise the Chait would never have happened.
That's an outside Yitzhahara. That's a snake.
That's the snake that came in.
Was there a Tikkun before the snake?
There was something. There was a challenge. It was a test.
That was
the test. That was the first test, but there was moments before that, meaning, yes, we could have overcome that, which would have been saying, I want to be only neshama, meaning I only want to be in tune with what Hashem wants. I don't want to, you know, engage with the snake, right? I don't want that a part of me. I don't want the Eitz Hadas Tov V'Ra part of me, that fruit. Mm-hmm. And then we would have overcome that challenge, and that would have been the tachlis. It would have been live in Gan Eden.
I think the Rambam says that.
And that's what we're fighting to get back to, no?
We're conflating two things, though. Yeah, Tevara, the Eitz Hadas Tevara doesn't mean no good meaning Eitz Hatov and no Ra Yitz Hahara. I don't think Rambam's pretty clear on that. The Eitz Hadas Tevara means you want to know good and know bad, meaning you're going to be able to call something good and call something bad. Before that, only Hashem knows, and you're just going to listen to it. But now, after you eat from it, you're going to start calling something's good, something's bad, and you're going to mix it up. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to start calling the wrong thing good and the wrong thing bad.
So that's called being connected to good and connected to bad.
Yeah,
right.
But it's not it's a Tov, it's a Hara.
There is a deep crossover also because you hear a voice inside of you telling you to do something and you're doing exactly your motion. You're hearing that voice and you're saying, what do you mean? This is, heaven is telling me to do this, right? And it's Ra. And you're conflating the two, right? You're confusing the two. So it is... There's a crossover to that idea.
That.
Saying even within the Rambam.
Yeah, but I don't think the tree brings the Yitzhar Tov necessarily. As I'm saying, the Tov that comes from
tree. I agree with you. I agree with you. But that's the tree is eating. The tree is the intimate connection, the Yediya, right? Uh-huh. The Das of Tov and Ra. Without that, you know exactly what you're supposed to do.
It was Emes and Sheker before. That's how the I was told.
Yeah.
Before,
yeah. But it was black. There was no confusion.
Before.
That's what it says.
Exactly. Before the eating of the Eitz Hadas, it was just Emes and Sheker. And when you eat from the Eitz Hadas, it becomes Tov and Ra.
Okay.
Different things.
Something different.
And it's or four before the Makar.
Right.
It's your Tov V'Ra.
Right.
It's that once you ate from the Eitz Hadas. You got the rasana, you need the toiv as the refuah.
But you had that.
But you had that.
That's your neshama.
Yeah,
okay, that's your pitvalian. Okay.
Maybe there's nothing to tell before
it's done. I don't know, it gets complicated because what happens when your kid turns 13?
And he gets.
But how does that play a role?
What do you mean? That's what happens is the Yitzhar Tov kicks in.
Right, until then, just. It's
only has the Yitzhara.
Only has the Yitzhara. And it just stays. Like dormant.
What do you mean? Dormant?
That's where it gets complicated.
Yeah.
What do you mean? You're not understanding what the Yitzhara is.
I remember what I was like when I was 12. Maybe there was talking about Yitzhara.
Yeah, I'm saying all you want to do is just it's all you just it's me. It's not what it's
No, but the Yitzhara gets such a good head start.
That's part of it.
But
also there's rabbis that are teaching you.
That's good, that's good. You have inside of you.
Your Yetzer HaTov is your parents.
You're like building already up. Before you have a Yetzer HaTov, you're already building up towards that.
You have the Yetzer HaTov the whole time.
True. But then again, you always have a guiding, watching from an adult for just...
Okay.
Exactly what your father spoke about in Shabbos.
Beautiful.
When we get the Yetzer HaTov, right.
So the viceroy asks for three things. And what's the nature of his asking, right? Because if we're saying that you have the power to rescue the princess within you, you have the power to go find passion and excitement, vitality in your Judaism and in your life. If you have that power within you, so then it's a weird line here. It's interesting, Beezy pointed out, that he would ask for three things. Like, what does he need any help for? He has the power. He is the power. Like, he is the light, right?
Why is that austere?
Why is it a steal?
You don't need more.
Because what do you need? What do you need outside anything? You just need yourself.
If it's within you, you don't need outside help.
You're on the answer already.
Oh.
Right? Okay, it's Pasha to you. I'm setting it up like a bomb kasha, okay? BZ, did you feel good when I said it's a bomb kasha? it's a valid question. It's definitely a valid question, especially.
It's your toe,
okay, now I'll defend it more. BZ knows when I learn. I like to defend his questions, right? No, it's not true.
I agree with your question.
Especially when we set it up and we said that an external force is not even powerful enough. So then what does the viceroy need anything else? Just viceroy, go, Nikuda Tova, save yourself.
I agree with you.
Okay.
Today we live in society 2021, so we're like the concept, the outside help. No, the help is from within.
Yeah.
I agree with BZ always.
The help is from within. So what is he asking for?
I don't know.
So what are these three things? So a Masharis, a servant. And what does that mean? It means the powers of the intellect. Meaning, in order to really truly find this, what we're searching for, what we set up at the beginning as calling it the princess, in order to really find that, you need to have a mind that is functioning at a level that's able to provide to you the yishuv hadas that you're able to then contemplate big ideas.
What's better? When somebody wants to come back to something for no rhyme reason, just for stupidity, or based on intellect?
So definitely Rabbi Nachman is not saying that you need to have everything worked out.
Or anything.
Before you go
anything?
Find the princess.
Why even anything?
Pella
is that the intellect is a Mishavis.
Yeah.
No, where'd you find that? It's like, Adra, what do you mean? My sefer is
everything.
It's
me.
No, it's serving you.
Intellect serves your neshama.
Not the me, right. It's amazing insight that he's bringing out here.
Yeah.
It's a misharis. I don't even know if everybody agrees with that.
I think that's great. That's awesome.
I think it's something awesome. To happen.
It's awesome.
It's maybe Yeshladim.
No,
I don't think so.
The intellect is not you. It's what gives you the edge. I like it.
It's what gives you the edge and the ability, edge. Right?
Could be your Yitzhara sometimes, but it gives you the edge.
So really it's a tefillah or a request in the story. It's a request that if I'm going to engage in this tshuva process or growth process, and I'm going to go and try to go find my own princess, right? Then allow me to have the mind to be able to process these ideas, because I'm going to need that to flow these things through my mind and my intellect in order for me, for my goal, right? And it's a beautiful point that it's the Masharis, right? That's awesome. The second request is a horse, right? And the horse, he says, the Breslover Mashpiyim say that the horse is a strong and healthy body. And that's a valid thing. By the way, what this is doing is validating, I think, in my quest for my own princess, it's validating my tefillos for some very basic necessities, right? To say to Hashem, like, let me be healthy, not stam for health, and not only when the health is taken away from me, but to say to Hashem, like, I need my health, and let me get through, you know, let me be healthy, and for the goal of finding the princess, right, is his request. And that's a very valid and it's a very validating thing that's worked into the story here, is that as you engage in this growth process, continuously be asking Hashem for that you should have a sound mind. You should be able to think through things, that Hashem should send you the correct, you should hear the correct messages. and that you should have a body that's able to handle the lifestyle, right? The lifestyle of searching and going on this journey. That you should be able to do that. You know, he brings some very beautiful, beautiful quotes from Rav Kook, but it's not typically worked into, necessarily worked into our Avodas Hashem is necessarily a major focus on health. But Rabbi Nachman does talk about the fact that, you know, Taivas Achila, that's like the big, it's one of the big bad ones, right? But he talks about how it just pulls you away from Hashem, right? Just being into just food and just gluttony at that level is something that takes you away from Hashem. And so he's asking here is if I'm going to engage in going to try to find Hashem, the princess, right? Try to find this lost princess. So I'm going to go engage in that, then allow me to have a healthy body and allow me to have a sound mind. And the third one is money, right? And so he says very clearly here, you know, he's not asking necessarily that he should be rewarded for wealth. It says specifically in the story, money for the hotzos. You know, you're going to lay out money. Expenses. You know, you'd like expenses, right? And that's a very valid thing also to daven for.
Costs money.
He's like, listen, yeah. Nisiya costs money.
Starts with the intellect.
But if you think about it.
Yeah.
These are like normal, regular day life things that we need.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, the way I took it, and I know it's wrong to think this way, but it's sort of like, that's like an obvious give me. Like, in order for me to do my Avodas Hashem, in order for me to get back to where I need to be, to get up to that level where I'm showing Hashem, look, I'm putting in the effort, it's sort of like, I need these things, give them to me so that I can get to that level. It's not something that I have to earn or that I need a daven for. It should be, the way I'm looking at it is that those are like a give me type of thing that it comes with the package of, for me to do A, B, and C, I need these three things.
Two points. First of all, you're right. You could ask that, you 100%, you could ask Hashem, what do you mean?
No.
100%.
But you don't necessarily get it.
Oh. So, now, go back to the story. There's an important line here, right? It's important to stress that we're on the bottom of 87, that we're not talking here, I think it's here, for wealth or amassing riches. He teaches that the viceroy requests only money for expenses, but then you have to... Right. Oh, one second.
He goes through it, and he says it's so that you can live on your... It's not for fancy things and for be a billionaire and this, that. Is that so you can pay your bills and live like a mensch?
Yes.
That's what he was intimating.
That's his interpretation. But in the story, the request the viceroy makes before setting out on his journey represent the three most fundamental elements for which a Jew must beseech the master of the world before setting out to search for his lost princess. Right? But there's such an important line here. I can't believe I can't find it.
Mental, physical, and financial well-being are the three pillars that put a person in a position to succeed in matters of spirituality. Right?
Yes.
So, those three things are what is needed.
They're needed, but remember in the story, I can't find it. I don't know why. Shachaval, he says it so much better than me. But remember that he asks for these three things, and then he goes out to the way. Before no mention in the story about getting it.
Right?
Meaning, these are three things that are important to daven for in your search for the lost princess, in your personal search for the lost princess. These are three things that are going to be important to have a sound mind, to have an intellect that can serve you, to have money for the stuff you need to spend money on for Avodas Hashem, to be able to afford that, and to have the Yishuv Adas, right? And to be able to have health. These are three things that are important. But in no way is he saying in the story that you need to get these three things. That's the first step to going to search for the lost princess, right? Meaning he asks for them, he davens for them, he asks the king for them, he davens for these three things, and that's validating in its own right to understand that it's totally natural and normal, and one should definitely be talking to Hashem about their basic necessities that they need, the things that they need to make them comfortable, to say to Hashem, this is an impediment. This is an impediment towards my finding the princess. Because I'm constantly distracted by the thoughts about money. I'm constantly distracted about how am I going to make ends meet, is normal. That takes you away from, he brings it out beautifully. He says, if these three things are so important, then be rest assured that the Yetzer Hara knows this. This Satan, or the Yetzer Hara, knows this. And he's willing to do whatever he can to make sure that the Jew is not going to find his lost princess. And so he knows that these three things are important, and so he's willing to throw whatever he can at these three impediments on the negative side to make sure that a Jew is not able to do it, right?
I think I misunderstood this.
Yeah.
The way I understood this, I understood it as any of these three things go wrong,
mm-hmm.
mental health, physical health, financial, are things that will push the princess further into the abyss. Forest or
okay.
the abyss.
Okay.
That's how I picked up on it.
Yes, when it's all one in one character, then yes, you're right. Meaning it's all internal, it's all in you. So when these three things go wrong, it doesn't allow, in the words of the book, right, it doesn't allow the viceroy to find the princess. But yes, exactly, it creates that separation between who you really are, your viceroy, your Nikuda Tova, your little Pintle Yid, and all the things that are good about Judaism. It creates that separation when these three things are not there. That's why the Yetzer Hara is going to try so hard to create problems in these three areas. Right? Rachmana Litzlan, in health and in money and in mental health or mental capacity and abilities to have Yishuv Hadas and to process things and to use your seichel and to think the way Hashem wants you to think. Yeah, the Yetzer Hara is going to fight you on these. Right? Because he knows this is what allows you to have get close, to go, oh, there it is. There's my princess, right? Yeah? That's what he asks for.
Well, sometimes there are the distractions, too.
Yeah.
The distractions.
You know what I'm saying? The person who has...
Someone who
doesn't have their health, then all of a sudden, big questions about life start coming to the fore.
Mm-hmm.
They start thinking about life.
Mm-hmm.
So you're only strengthening what I'm saying is that it's a negative distraction by you not having it and you having to keep dominating.
Saying that it hits you in the head and like, where am I going? I need to go back to home.
Right. It's a wake up sometimes. So like,
yeah,
you know, part of the, you know, when you're going on the journey, you need these things. It's like a catch 22 in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you need them and you really need them because they pull you away in all kinds of directions.
When you don't have them.
When you don't have them. Then when you have them, they can be a source of distraction.
Then they can...
They can pull you in the other
Listen,
direction.
Listen, the Yitzhar knows how to get involved,
get
right?
Way, right?
Knows how to get involved either way. Either way, the Yitzhar knows
how to get involved. Give him money. Give him a lot of money. He's going to go in the wrong direction.
Can I propose that this is not the prerequisite for the journey?
Uh-huh.
This is the first step of the journey. I think this is what you're saying. But
right.
This is the first step of the journey. So it's not God-given rights that you just get. It's not something that just comes. If you want to find the Pintle Yid, then you have to start the journey. And this is the first step, is ask for your help. Ask for money to continue the journey and ask for the intellectual capacity.
Meaning just the asking and the recognizing that there is someone who you're asking and something that you're lacking.
And something that you're lacking and something you need.
Yeah. Very nice.
It's the start of the journey.
It's the first step.
It's the first step.
But remember, the second step doesn't necessarily come only after the first step
Correct.
Is attained, right? That's the one point.
You don't start one thing after the next one's done.
Yeah. He says it straight. Because the story says...
That's
the riot to you. The story says he just asks and then he goes on his way. So he put the request in, right? He writes, this is what I need, puts it in the box, and then he leaves, right? He did his tefillah. Tmimos, pashtos, he did his tefillah. He davened for it. And the reason why he needs these things is not for wealth, and it's not stam that he should be the strongest guy in the...
For life.
Oh, that's where he says it? Ah, that's why I couldn't find it. Thank you. What does he say? Go ahead.
Three elements create an emotional foundation conducive to spiritual searching, intellectual, physical, and financial well-being. Even though we have not yet been granted these three blessings, it is proper to set out on our journey in tandem with sincere prayer.
So you have this lesson of prayer, of sincere prayer, of saying it straight to Hashem. I need this. I want to start searching for the princess. I need these elements because this is what allows me to do it, right? Okay, beautiful. Beautiful. Next week, chapter 5.
No, chapter 4. Right.
Well, yes, that's exactly what it was. That's exactly what it was. Now, we'll I think it's beautiful. It's beautiful. There's one more point, but we'll get. We'll start next week with the last point from chapter 4 because it's an important point to understand failure in the context. Read that again before you get to chapter 5, the last part. Failure in the context of triumph. You'll read it again? You're a chazer over? Okay. I know. Thank you.
Why is it this way? Sure. Why is it the viceroy searching?
As opposed to who?
Lost princess. And not the princess searching for lost viceroy.
Because the viceroy is always there. The viceroy, nothing ever touches the viceroy.
It's the pintle. It's
the
clean.
The viceroy is the pintle yid.
Yeah, but you have to find that pintle yid inside of you.
Pintle yid's always there. That's the exactly the point that has
you
to...
You need the pintle yid exposed. You don't need to find it. It's there. You need to pull it up. You need to bring it out. You don't need to find it.
That sounds like he's doing something wrong.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
Tzaddik is doing something wrong.
Right. Right.
How do you say that?
Right.
Also, I have an issue with you saying, with it saying, the king couldn't do it.
Uh-huh.
The king could.
Yeah.
And that was the point I was trying to make.
But did you read that paragraph? External voices don't help when you're in that place.
And it's not strong.
No.
External experiences, meaning anything the king can send you. Of course. Of course. Of course. Of course. We're in no way saying that Hashem is limited in any way. Of course. But what Hashem desires in the world is that the person themselves should raise themselves up.
He doesn't want to give you the job.
Okay.
He could if he wanted to.
Good.
He could do it now.
Good.
Meaning that's not his purpose.
Meaning if the king says, get here now, and you're
scared.
Here. But out of fear.
It's $100.
Right.
No. Not out of love.
Yeah.
$30.
Yeah.
Big mazel.
No. You'll come in like a subject, but you won't come in like a daughter.
No, you're saying that's a limit. You're saying there's a limit. You're limiting what he can do.
No,
I'm saying that he can get you to the exact same place.
But what's the value of that? You're embarrassed to be there. That's Nama de Kisufa.
I used it bad.
That's you didn't do anything. So now you're embarrassed.
Why are you embarrassed?
Because you just got
basking in the glory of Hashem's baruch.
You didn't earn it. You didn't do any work. You didn't earn it.
Felt good, but I think it was overstated.
You didn't earn it. This process of the princess being lost, it has to happen.
But Yaakov, anything that you say that's different is you're limiting what he can do.
No.
Yes.
You're saying that his deepest desire is that you should earn it on your own.
That's what I'm saying.
That you should earn it on your own.
Right, but
of course, I'm saying it in words that he can't. What it means is in the system that he's created, there's no value if he goes out and just takes you in.
But if he would change the system and you would do it.
Yeah.
It would create the exact same result.
But we're human beings. That's Nama de Kisufa. That's what it says, Mamish. That's you'd be embarrassed to take that gift of closeness with Hashem because you didn't earn it. And so Bedavka wants you to have the opportunity to earn it. Meaning this system is set up for you to fail. It is set up where Hashem says, may the no good one take you. That's the way the system is set up. Because when you yourself can fight back in, when your viceroy can go find your princess, now you've earned it. Now you come in, you're standing up on the medal stand. You didn't cheat to get there, right?
How do you explain